grew up in Salisbury. I went to over. There's a Forest Technical School. I graduated from that school in 1990. Yeah, so I went to Ogre. I was born right here in Salisbury. So that's where my family is from. So I'll start maybe from the beginning. I was born in Salisbury. I went to Ogre and I finished the Forest Technical School. That was right around the time the Soviet Union collapsed. So to avoid the Soviet military army or Russian army, I entered at the university faculty of forestry back in Jelgava. There is a Latvian University of Agriculture. So I went there for 3 years. And the deal was, if you are a student, you're not going to be recruited. I really enjoyed university. But then it was a four-year program. I was 1 year short of completing it when I applied for international student exchange program between former Soviet Union and United States Department of Agriculture, USDA. That program that was offered, there was, I don't know, 70 plus people applied, and two of us were chosen. We had an interview with U.S. ambassador in St. Petersburg. He came over and we had a one-on-one interview. We had to pass some tests, and you know, I don't know, they kind of chose me to go as one of the person. So there were two people from Latvia, from Estonia was one girl, from Russia, Belarus. We had a group of people, 14 of us, that everything was paid, and that was in 1994. Everything, all year was paid from the time you step on the tarmac in Riga to fly to the United States, all the way 1 year back when we landed. Everything was covered. It was a one-year exchange program. That program was designed for agricultural students, and because I was in forestry back in Jelgava that year, I thought, what's the big deal, take 1 year off from the studies, or just go to the States? So I did go. I told my mom and dad about 2 weeks before I'm leaving, oh, by the way, I'm going for a year to the States, and they said, fine, and so I landed in New York City in June 21, 1994, and that's when my North American leg started. I went back to Latvia. I worked in Riga for International Trade Center, working phones and whatnot. I stayed in Latvia for 2.5 months, and that's when I met my future wife. Oh, she was studying at Jelgava, Latvian University of Agriculture. She's a veterinarian by trade. She's a doctor now. She works in clinics here in St. Albert. My mom was born 1 year after the Second World War. My dad was born during the war. They wouldn't talk much about it. I went to the places I've seen. We have a countryside where we have family on properties, and there's not much left. And those people who are still there, they choose not to talk about it. You know, having said that, my dad has been, you know, called out to KGB and interviewed because of my grandfather, who was actually serving in the Second World War too, in the Latvian division under the SS or something like that. But he died in the World War II, and because of that relationship, my dad was called a number of times for the KGB quarters for interviewing processes. But I've never met none of my grandfathers. I can tell you what the Soviet Union Latvia was like. Everything was pretty fine. This is what you do. This is where you go. Very similar situation. And then when you go to first grade, very similar to my kids right now, you start in grade one and go to grade four, and that's your first year of schooling, and the programs are different, but when we went, it was all uniforms, everything was kind of, you know, Young Communist League, and Lenin in every place you go, and, you know, daycare, you go to daycare, there's a room, and there's Lenin, everything is red, and it was kind of norm, and you never expected anything different. You kind of grew up, and you laugh about some of the things, and you ignore others, and you kind of grow up, right? He had to be really careful what he's saying and what he's not saying. As an example, my dad, he was a sailor by trade, so he worked as a mechanic on the ships. until age of 19 or 20. And he was traveling. He told me, oh, yeah, we went across Atlantic. I saw, you know, Cuba. And then he comes back, and he has to go to the Russian army. Okay, he gets recruited. He comes back, and all his privileges or visa, international visa for travel, has been taken away from him. Because all he, you know, they would not allow Russian or Soviet Union government would not allow to travel him because of my grandfather. So he had basically in early 20s or so when he had set his mind to go to sea and be part of the of that world, he had to change his career. He came back, he went through a couple of different trades, and he then in early 70s, Soviets had a nuclear research station actually stationed in Salaspils. And it's in the woods, all secluded by forest. There's one road that leads to it, heavily guarded, but that's where the nuclear tests were done for the Soviet Union research facility. Right, some of it was for military program, apparently. Some of it was from, I don't know, whatever, space program. So my dad ended up working until he retired in that nuclear research station as a mechanic, making sure that all the cooling systems were fine. So he was the one who gets there, radiation or not, he gets all the fixes done and all the piping and everything else, plumbing if you wish. So that was his job. He was responsible for the cooling system functioning. Well, two kilometers or so to go through the woods to that research facility, that's where he worked. And my mom, she would work yet another few kilometers away in a bush or in a forest. Once again, there was a center for scientists, physicists, who dealt with all the information that came from the research station. That would be like a think tank where they process all the information. They run some... She was a bookkeeper, clerk type of thing. She looked after just regular sort of initiatives there. But yeah, so in all the Salaspils that we live, we really call it sort of a science center almost, because that was apparently built at the time when that research station was designed and established, and most of the scientists would live there. You know, high-profile PhDs to our standards, physicists and chemists, and they would just go and run these tests and do whatever. The corruption was everywhere you go. If you have money, you can get... It's with double standards. Have money, you can get things done differently. Anything from food to clothing to cars to, medical support or Medicare, if you wish. We never had money to do any of that. To this day, my mom and dad, they don't know how to drive a car. They have no driver's license. That's a foreign world to them. They use the public transport. They live in a two or three bedroom apartment, and that's their world. It was a big deal for them to have a small like a vacation or plot where they can grow their vegetables. It affected more young people like myself than older generation, I think. Well, to me, it was, oh, finally it's over. Now I can do whatever I want. And even before it collapsed, you had a chance to travel abroad. I was doing orienteering and practicing and taking it seriously. And then I was in Sweden in probably 1990 or 1991, other side of the Baltic Sea, and I'm thinking about it, and this is not much different than in Latvia as far as the environment around me, as far as the education and things like that. And I, at that time, I said to my girl, I want to get the best education I can. Obviously, I'm not going to get rich, but I want a good education. And then I went to university in Latvia, and as soon as I realized the university is not for me because there's too much corruption, too much booze going on among the professors, and I had thoughts about dropping out of the university. I talked to one of the professors. He said, well, hang in. If nothing else, you get your diploma. But then opportunity came to the States, and it was, I did not think twice about going because I had enough of what I've seen back in Latvia, and to end up in the States. I got Master's of Science in Forest Management Economics from Penn State University. I have a bachelor's from Louisiana State, and I was minoring in Business Administration. And just recently, I finished my Master of Business Administration MBA from University of Edinburgh, Scotland, which I did distance learning. What do I call myself? I don't know, dad? I use my forestry background. That's where my career is. I'm a forestry consultant or natural resource consultant, and I deal with large database management, helping forestry companies to get their sustainable or renewable resource management plans together. When I grew up, it was dual culture. There was official culture, and then there was the culture of human express. Official is you follow the Soviet sort of trademarks, Young Communist League, pioneers and all these things, and you say, yes, I'm this, I'm that. I will follow and obey the rules, and then you walk away from the school, you walk away from the society almost, the official, the visible one, and you have a Merry Christmas at home, right? You close the drapes, and you have a Christmas tree. I always grew up with a Christmas tree and presents. Next day you go to school or to work, but always Christmas Eve we had a celebration. On Ligua, summer solstice, the same thing. Always there would be a wreath, there would be celebration. That's a big deal. Under Soviet regime, that was not allowed. You are not supposed to do it because it's not Soviet time. People did it anyway. And so when I saw there's this duality almost, if you wish, right? There's this official wave, that the right way, and then there's the Latvian old traditional way. So it was growing up in a culture that you basically learn very quickly what you're supposed to say or how do you supposed to behave in one place versus another. Not just three. I'm starting to forget my Russian, but when I grew up it was two languages, Russian obviously, and Latvian, and English. I'm still working on it. It depends. The old generation, they speak as if they were being removed, and they speak totally different. They don't use the words that Latvians do, or what I was used to. They always think when they talk. Whereas back in Latvia, you just go and talk, and if you don't get it right, you find a way to express it yourself anyways. Whereas here, it's more proper Latvian. I laugh because that's English translation. And I recognize that, whereas some of them may not realize where the world's coming from. We have two kids. Carla is 6 years old. Both of them are born here in Canada. One is Edmonton, one is in St. Albert. Tom is 9 years old. We spend more time with Tom at home. He speaks and understands Latvian better than my daughter. My daughter, she understands if she wants. But she has definitely, a harder time communicating. Now, having said that, when she was 3 years old, I took her back to Latvia and she was able to communicate no problem. She knows the words, just not used to say, but she was able to do it. And it is a loss to me. We try to speak at home Latvian, but after a while, you just kind of realize that they make no connection what I'm saying, so you kind of switch to English. And I find myself guilty of that, switching back and forth. So it's kind of lost. I wish my daughter would speak more Latvian. They are fully integrated, and to me, I wish they would, one day learn about Latvia, where I'm coming from, and feel proud of the heritage. On the other hand, at least from what I'm seeing right now, from the outside looking in back in Latvia, I truly don't think they're missing a whole lot. From the cultural perspective, absolutely. From history, absolutely. Are they being robbed, so to speak? Latvian heritage? I question that. I miss that they don't speak, but on the other hand, I miss more, the grandparents who would look after them, who would be able to teach them things. Because right now, they learn anything from me or daycare, and there's only so much I can do. So I think for us, it was more important to get accepted almost in the society and establish ourselves through work or through how we present ourselves, more so than focusing on kids, that they should be all right. Because I knew the kids will be all right no matter what. Mind you, they would lose Latin heritage, perhaps. What I found to me that was, at that time, was more important to understand where I am, where I belong, do I belong in the society, and how can I contribute. That's why I'm taking no voting anymore, even though I was a Latvian citizen. Actually, probably I am still on the paper. I deliberately choose not to vote in Latvia, because who am I to say how the life should be in Latvia if I'm not living there? I want to say how things should be done here in Edmonton, in Alberta, because that's the home I live in. That's where I can contribute to society. And so to me, it was, what can I do where I live and make it better, rather than sort of looking back and longing for something that I chose a long time ago to walk away from. There's a fundamental difference, the reasons why I left Latvia and why they left Latvia. Under the circumstances, I don't know what their decision would be. I left for education. I wanted to get the best education I can that universities of Latvia could not offer to me in a forestry which was chosen of interest to me. There was none. When I got and started learning and doing more things, I had to make a choice. Should I return back to Latvia and practice forestry there, or look for other alternatives? When I was looking at making that decision, I could not find enough incentives to return back to Latvia. There was no need for my education. There was absolutely no desire from anyone from Latvia or otherwise for me to be there. Parents are really good. They basically say, do what's right for you and we will understand you. I've been actually in Imantas board for a few years when I had a chance before kids were born. I was secretary for a couple of years. I really enjoyed the time. I thought I can contribute to this. I think this is important for society, and this is important for us to create that environment that people come and actually find the common sort of belongingness. But it's what I do in the weekends. It was not my way of life. It was not my way of living anymore. It was, I understand, it's the right thing to do. I want to help them out, but I will not go and sing in a choir because I know what my limits are, right? You know, so I have a different perspective on things. So I don't miss the national celebrations as much. Deep down inside, I'm still Latvian. I belong to Latvian society. I want to contribute the best I can. After I looked after my own interest and my family interest first. And thus far in this process, that last week, I gave an oath to Canadian Queen, or Canada Queen, and become a citizen, both my wife and I. And we have to forego the Latvian citizenship, but it was a conscious decision. If we decide we're going to do it. I say I'm a Latvian who lives in Canada. It would be a flag. It would be a red, white, red flag and the symbols behind it. Yeah, because it just shows how Latvia is. There's always fights. There's white meaning the celebration, the good. And there's red again that means the fight is never, ever, ever ending. And I think we're going through, from Latin perspective, the same thing. There's fights, there's good times, there's fights, there's good times. Integration is inevitable. Preservation is very important. But it's how you do it. If people think that if I'm coming from Latvia, that I should wear always white shirt and whatever, the Latvian, wearing my Jāņu Day crown on an everyday basis, there are people like that around. It's not going to happen, right? Preservation is very important. The heritage is very important. But it's not the only thing to me anymore. It's at risk not only because there would be some economic hardship on people. No, I think it's at risk because most intelligent people that I've met, they are either fled the country or do not participate in its formation right now. I'm talking from people that I met at universities when I was back in Latvia and talking to people. I talked to them and said, so what do you do? I have values in the family and we celebrate Latvian traditions. They stay in that circle, but they don't contribute as a society a whole lot anymore. And, so I find it, well, if that's how you preserve your nationalism, then I think Imant is doing not a bad job by working only on weekends, right? I think people here are more open, more friendly. What surprised me is the fact that there is the voluntary activities happening here in Canada. I have not seen them in the States. I have not seen them in Louisiana, where I lived for 3 years. I did not see them in Pennsylvania. Volunteers. And there in Canada, people just go and volunteering. Anything from daycares to schools to hockey camps to cleaning up the river valley to whatever the activities might be. All the way. And even last Thursday, when I became a Canadian citizen, there was a professor who came out and gave us a speech and how he contributed and to his, you know, business, and then he decided, you know, he has enough money, he retired at age 45, and he was now close to 70 years. For 25 years, he has been volunteering. And I have never seen that anywhere else. And to me, that is something that I really admire. It's something unique to Canadian culture. I think it's something that people may not recognize, that being Canadian, you do not only receive that benefit of being Canadian, you have also responsibilities of being Canadian. And the responsibility, one of the responsibilities, as I learned, is volunteer and help other people. And I have not seen it anywhere. I have not seen it in Latvia. I have not seen it in the States. I have seen it here in Canada. And to me, that was a very welcoming thought, and I feel very comfortable with that. Yeah, to me, that was the biggest difference.